This is Scott Pilgrim versus the Minute 110. Welcome to the Scott Pilgrim vs. the Minute podcast, the show where we review and analyze the movie Scott Pilgrim vs. the World 1 minute at a time. He is from podcastterbia.com. It's Dave Castile.
Hello.
And you'll find this other guy at streamingnonsense.com, Sam Brown.
Hello.
And as we continue to roll on...
So much energy.
I know.
I was trying to be more excited.
As we roll on through the credits here, this one won't be as long as the last one. We had fun talking about the cast. Probably not as much to talk about here with the rest, but... This minute goes from stunt coordinator Brad Allen all the way to musical performance supervisor Chris Murphy. So,
oh yeah, Chris Murphy.
Yeah, that guy. Okay, you know him from the Murphy clan. And that's that. So what we're going to talk about here is just a little bit of the film itself, the production of the film. So for example, some of the things that I liked, and you know, for a movie that's just this kind of fun comic booky film, little love story and all that stuff thrown in, I like the fight sequences. I thought we had with that stunt coordinator, Brad Allen doing his thing, you know,
I see what you did there.
But the fighting was really good. You know, this, I mean, holds up, I think, with a lot of Hong Kong cinema when it comes down to the fighting, because you had a lot of that. With the parkour type fighting and just the great sense of not just a bunch of guys just hammering it out. Did you guys get the same sense? I know Sam, Dave, you know, what'd you
got
think?
A little bit of the fun, almost Jackie Chan feel to a lot of it. You know, having a good time using the environment and well choreographed, well scripted.
Yeah.
Well filmed.
Yeah. And you get the, tie-ins to it also being a comic book, so you got a lot of the movement lines and just the jumping through the air. It's amazing how the physics of the, you know, the world change when the fight happens, because you have your film, it's just your everyday film, things are happening, whatever, but then all of a sudden a fight happens and a different movie comes into play, and that's
but not in a jarring way.
No. Well, the first one, maybe, because up until that point, you really don't know this is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, the movie becomes a totally different movie with Matthew Patel.
Right. Okay. So, like, what I wanted to bring up is the variety from fight to fight.
Mm-hmm. No two fights were alike. Sure.
Right.
Right. Like, there's a different mechanism for each. And some of those cues come from the books, but... They changed enough that they made a lot of these fights their own in the movie. And we get a lot of that variety. And I think you're right. Like, we don't have a sense of the rules of this world. And then Matthew Patel coming crashing through the ceiling and busting everything you knew in that moment about how this world works is a dramatic change.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a great introduction to what we're going to see in the future in a way, but we still get enough variety. So.
And the movie all of a sudden really budget-wise changes, because you had this movie that really could have just been done on a shoestring budget because it's just all drama and acting, but then all of a sudden you get all these fight sequences that are well choreographed with lots of special effects thrown into play. That's where your $60 million budget came in, which is a crazy budget for a movie that... Nobody knew what this was going to be in 2010. And this movie made no money. I mean, this movie lost.
It made next to nothing in the theater. Yeah.
It made $31 million in the U.S. I don't know what it made worldwide. I don't have that up. But that's a pretty big loss. But this movie, cult film-wise, I mean, people love this movie. We love this movie. And I know when we started this podcast, the big thing was is that Brian doesn't like this movie.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. Brian, has your character grown and developed over the journey of this movie?
I have grown. Because when I saw this, I had only seen this movie once, and I had seen it due to you two saying, you have to see this movie, you're going to love it. I mean, Dave saying it's all about Ramona, and you know, Sam having talked about the books, and it's just a great adaptation. And I'm like, okay, I saw it that first time. I was like, okay. I mean, I enjoyed it, but... I left it seeing the first time thinking I don't have to see it again. I've probably now seen it in the last, what, 5-6 months that we've been doing this show.
You say like you watch it when it comes on TV all the time.
I watch it constantly. I have probably seen this movie in full a dozen times in the last 6 months, plus the minutes. And if I'm flipping through and it's on, I just put it on and leave it on. It's grown on me.
It turns into a new, I don't want to say guilty pleasure, but it's a movie that is old. You will stop on it automatically and just let it play.
Absolutely.
And it's so watchable. And there's so much that you see every... Did you still see things you didn't see before, even though we've talked about all
this? My God, you know, I was watching some sequences, and I'm like, Jesus, how did we not talk about that? There are so much that we still didn't talk about, and that's, you know, where I would hope, you know, we get some listenership. I mean, because these podcasts are going to end. You know, we're wrapping up these minutes, and we're not going to go through these minute by minute. But this show doesn't end. You know, we still have plans about doing little shows once in a while. You know, it's not going to be a weekly basis, but something just to keep it fresh. But there's still so much in this film. Even we could sit through ourselves one day and watch through it and say, gosh, you know, we got to talk about that 1 minute again because we missed half of it. Like you guys talked last week about one of the minutes when Gideon's glass is cracking. I actually missed that the first time when we talked about it. When I had watched the movie since, I'm like, oh, there it is. And it's like so obvious, but there's so much happening on the screen. So, and that goes to the production of this movie. So much thought and detail went in to all these scenes, not just the fights, but just all the little stuff in the background, really placing that setting of Toronto and using Toronto as a character, even though they made fun of it a lot. You know, there was so much there.
Just Canada in general. I wanted to bring up all the interesting, visual digital effects they did to give it that video game feel at the same time.
We'll bring it up.
That was my cue for you guys to say, yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, all the stuff that happens at the fights, we bring up the P-bar all the time.
Yep.
the points and the coins, like all these things that they pull in that aren't necessarily, that, you know, some of that stuff is taken off the books, but a lot of it, they created their own visual language for the film and audio language as well.
Yeah, I liked the every fight was getting ready to start, when we have the, okay, now the fight starts. Because it seemed like every fight had its little preliminary moments. Sometimes they would last for weeks, like with Todd. but we would have these moments, and then all of a sudden we'd get the verses. Right in the middle with the two characters framed and lining up. I mean, those are great shots. Like I said, this would be a great coffee table book, you know, a photo book of just showing all the great shots in this film that it had. And that would be some of those, is just those lining up the characters. What do you think, Dave?
Agreed. And one of the things is that I really loved was that everybody in the movie took all of that in stride. You know, and to some extent, we believed it was all really there, because even when Live says, you know, I'm in love, you know, and he like, you know, blows it away.
Bats away the hearts, yeah.
You know, and bats it away. But the one time it was really, really acknowledged was, how are you doing that with your mouth?
Right. With, you know. With the FU.
And, yeah, and he was like, wait a minute, you know, that suddenly like he's focused on something else, you know. That was probably my favorite running gag was
the Julie.
Was her doing that and her bleeping. So
yeah, I mean, if you look at that too, I mean, that just goes to show you with Edgar Wright and just the planning, because you got to plan that. You can't just say after the fact, you know, it'd be fun to throw that in there. I mean, you got to plan that whole thing out so that it works contextually with the film, so that it flows. So, you know, wiping away the hearts, you know in your storyboarding that you're going to have that moment, so you got to make sure that you've committed to it. Now in film, the effects guy's got to come through and make sure that lines up well, so it looks like he's doing that. Just well done.
I like the usages of I think I brought these up often with the little sound cues that would happen in the background, like the you know, the Zelda discovering the secret type sound, you know, and all those little cues that might not be obvious that you pick up maybe on a second, third, fourth, eighth, tenth viewing, you know. Or you listen to us and we point them out. I think those add layers to what you're watching that I think really provide some interesting depth.
Well, I think that's what was fun about watching it by the minute and picking up on the details. like I didn't notice when all the coins drop after the Gideon defeat, the coin bouncing from drum to drum on Kim. I didn't notice that when you brought it up. The next time I saw it, I'm like, that's really cool. Yeah. So there was certainly some intent there too. And yeah, well played. Well played. So any other thoughts on the production of this film? What we thought about how it all came together? No, it doesn't look like
it. Well, I feel like we're heaping a lot of love on you know, the production and effects. And there's a lot about cinematography. I think we called up a lot of interesting shots that provide some dynamic scenes and some like you know, when camera angles can tell you something about a character.
Right.
Like, I think that's really cool.
Or give you a scope. Yeah, give you a sense of scope.
Scale. For the scene and scale. Yeah.
But wait, can you elaborate on that? How a camera angle tells you about a character?
Well, I think the most recent moment is when Ramona was walking away from Nyes and Scott in a couple minutes ago, you know, and you get a feel of, you know, Ramona's character in that moment as she's leaving these characters behind. Mm-hmm. You know, like that contributes to Ramona's character a little. We talked a lot about others, but I can't by memory bring them up.
Well, we would have moments where the whole background around the characters just disappears, and now all of a sudden they're standing in black. Blackness.
Sure, yeah.
You know, that giving you those angles that show you, yeah, like during the breakup.
Solitary. Solitary,
yeah.
Solitude, yeah.
Yeah.
Like there were interesting shots that, I'm not that sure if it's character, but like in terms of scale, that would be shot like between someone's, you know, like someone standing in the foreground, you're looking between their legs at their opponent or something like mm-hmm. that would give you scale or perspective.
Yeah, this movie had to be hard to make. I mean, this is one I wouldn't mind you really getting I haven't listened to the commentary.
The commentary tracks are pretty cool. There's a bunch of them on the DVDs.
Yeah, if the Edgar Wright commentary and just understanding his framing of the scenes, because and like we've always talked about, the book was in a lot of ways, especially the early books, because we know it started to change as the books went on.
Yeah.
But the early books, I mean, his storyboard's right there. I mean, the exact scene is framed right out of the book, and that's always
been interesting that they're able to. We talked about this a bit, but the ability to capture the comic book frames on film is really noteworthy. And you could make the argument like, well, okay, they're just copying what's on the page, whatever. But I think pulling that off in a way that it doesn't necessarily look like a comic book. We talked about this a bunch where scenes would slide frame to frame.
Right.
You know, like you would change perspective or you'd layer the people on top of each other, below each other, next to each other. You'd do them all like a raid out in the starburst, like all these different ways of shooting that.
Yeah.
That gives you that comic book feel and replicates the experience of reading the book, I think is noteworthy.
Okay. Dave, any, other thoughts from you?
Nothing really stands out. I mean, it was altogether, it was done well. It was choreographed well. I mean, we've kind of gone through everything through there. Fantastic use of kind of the visual gags and the running gags, and they committed to them and they stuck to them.
Yeah.
You know, the hair, you know, any opportunity they had, you know, they didn't, you know, they used that, you know, the Julie swearing, it was constantly done.
A lot of callbacks. So
I think Ramona needed to change her hair color one more time. you know, so.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, that's good for this minute. We got two more minutes to go. Next minute, we're going to do some more discussion. Then we're going to get into music in the final minute. So, Dave, how can the listeners tell us what they think about this movie and what types of things that they would want us to talk about in special episodes in the future?
You can find us at Scott versus Minute and on the Twitter at Scott versus Minute. You can find us at ScottVersusMinute.com on the Facebook Scott versus Minute, and you can send an email to ScottVersusMinute@gmail.com.
And Sam is coming up with a movie to tell you about that he and I reviewed, and he's going to tell you about the show that we reviewed it on.
I am struggling to come up with a good option. Let's do this one.
Yeah, do it.
It's not good. So Brian and I review obscure streaming movies. This time I'll give you Fire and Ice, the animated Ralph Bakshi film that no one's ever heard of. Brian, you're dancing. No one can see this.
I know. You told me to do something. You always look at what I do when you announce these.
Our show is called Streaming Nonsense. You can find us at streamingnonsense.com, where you can see all of our Twitters and Facebooks and
all that other stuff.
You can find our RSS feeds and all that.
Awesome. You can find Dave and I at podcastderby.com, where we do a show where we talk about beer, drink beer, talk about movies, TV, music, whatever's on our mind. We also do lists on occasion, and we do like doing lists. So go to podcastderby.com and let us know what you would like us to rank from one to whatever. So that's going to do it for this minute, and we'll see you all in just a minute.